So one thing we're going to start, and this is going to be permanent, that Sunday our first class is about the parasha, and we're going to talk about one message from the parasha that I can apply for the rest of the week. Because the Torah comes to teach me how to refine myself and how to work on one thing when I can't work on everything at the same time. So I have to concentrate on one thing at a time, even though in the parasha there's many, many different topics and many different things that I can apply to my Avodat Hashem, but we're going to choose at least once a week something that can I can take and apply it for the week, and that's going to be my weekly practice or something that I work on. Down the line, I think what we'll do is even maybe we'll do when we increase the classes, and we'll do every day a piece of the portion of the parasha corresponding to the piece of the day, because when we read every day the parasha, we read today, we read the first part, tomorrow the second, and so forth, and we can do every day one little piece corresponding to that part of the parasha, because there is a certain amshacha every day that can be connected through the parasha that we want to apply to us. So this week's parasha is Vayetzeh. We read that after Yaakov stole, so to say, the brachot from Yitzchak, he runs away because Esav wants to kill him. So last week we read how most of the theme of the parasha was the bracha, the brachot that Yaakov took instead of Esav. And then of course Esav gets upset and he wants to kill him, and Rivka tells Yitzchak, Er tells Yaakov, run away. So you're not going to be caught by your brother. Which that in itself brings a big question, because what Esav couldn't find Yaakov. He ran out a few kilometers and disappeared. But that's a whole different question. We know that Yaakov now is going to Haran because he has now a mission to build Bet Israel. He has to build the nation. And the first thing that he finds when he gets to Haran is the love of his life. And the beginning of the parasha is concentrating on how Yaakov saw Rachel, how he wanted her, and the whole story, which is basically the foundation of our nation, is coming from this man and these two women. Later on, they're maidservants, but we are called Bnei Israel. We came from this whole romantic story. And you see Yaakov going down to Haran, and he comes like his father. He comes to the well to meet Rachel. And of course comes the great question, if there are two sisters, why Yaakov decides to skip Leah and go straight to Rachel? So of course it says that Rachel came there and he saw her and she was beautiful and he fell in love and he right away gave her a kiss. He wasn't so serious. Right away he gave her a kiss, told her he wants to marry her. And of course he goes to his uncle and tells him, I'm your nephew, I'm the son of Rivka, and I want to marry your daughter. So Lavan was like, well, you just came, right away a wedding, who's going to pay for this wedding? So Yaakov says, okay, you know what, I'll work for 7 years, I'll pay for 50% of the wedding. I don't need favors. Let me work for 7 years in order for me to pay for the wedding. So Lavan says, okay, of course, go ahead, work for the wedding. And the whole story is concentrating on the concept of Rachel and Leah. What we're going to talk about today is why Yaakov chose Rachel and he skipped Leah. Why? What's behind it? So it's always good to start with a little story, that there was once a man who went to learn to be a psychiatrist, and he spent years and years, and he learned and he practiced and he went and with other psychiatrists to learn the trade, and finally came the day that it was the first day he has his license, he's ready to go to work. So he goes to the hospital, to the psychiatric department. And he walks with his board, and he's all happy, and he walks to the first room, and he sees a man crying and crying, and all he's saying is, Rochele, 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 like this. He's not stopping to cry. Turns around to the doctor and he says, what's the deal with this guy? So he tells him, well, this is a, you know, he fell in love with a woman, Rachel, and he never got to marry her. And up until today, a broken heart, he's still fixed on the fact that he didn't get his Rochale. Okay, he subscribes him the medication, tells him what to do, and walks to the next room. He walks to the next room, sees another guy all angry, banging on the walls, kicking, screaming, and saying the same thing, Rochale, Rochale, Rochale. So he tells the doctor, what's the matter with this guy? He's like, oh, that's the guy who ended up marrying Rochale. So we come to the question, why did Yaakov skip on Leah and want Rachel? Now it's kind of a sad story because he fell in love with Rachel. It says Rachel was beautiful. And really, he didn't get to spend much time with her because they were only married for 12 years. Rachel died when she was 36. They got married when she was 22. So he only spent with her 14 years. And he didn't get time to spend with her. He was busy with the rest of the kids. And then the rest of his life is without her. And then for Netzach Netzachim, for eternity, he's not even buried next to her. So he had a very short period with Rachel. He didn't have a long time. Most of the time he was with Leah. And this is also, you know, you would think that the Torah comes to us with a love story, we'll have some more happier ending. But from that we also have to learn another thing. So the great question is, why did Yaakov skip on Leah and go to Rachel? And the story says that when Yaakov went to Rachel, he told her, I want to marry you. So she told him, wait, this is not so simple. My father is not so simple. You're going to have to convince him. Now you're going to have to convince him why I should marry you and not my older sister. He's a very straight man, straight in his opinions, of course. And you're going to have to convince him why he should marry you, me, why you should marry me and not marry my older sister, because he's going to want you to marry the older sister. So he says, listen, I know your father's a crook. And David HaMelech, he saw it in Ruach HaKodesh, that David HaMelech is going to say, Im gvar, Im ikesh titpatal. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Im gvar tamim titamam. If somebody is tamim, is innocent, as titamam, you'll be the same way, you'll be innocent with him. Ach, Im ikesh titpatal, somebody who's stubborn or tricky, then you act the same way. So Yaakov says, listen, I know your father's a crook, he's a fraud, so I'll be like a brother to him, and I'll go tricky. Because in the beginning, we know in the Torah that when Yaakov came to Laban, he didn't tell him he's his nephew. I mean, he didn't tell he didn't tell Rachel that he's her father's nephew. He told her that he's her father's brother. He didn't tell her, my mother is your father's brother. But anyways, Yaakov says, I'm going to be tricky like your father. And he tells her, under the chuppah, I know he's going to try to switch. I'm going to give you a few simanim, a few marks, and you're going to tell me that at the night of the chuppah. That way I know they're not switching you to me. And the simanim, he gave her four words. And he told her, Nerot, Hadlakat Nerot, Chala, and Nida. Four words he told her, which are the three main mitzvot that a woman has to keep, which is Hadlakat Nerot, candlelighting, Chala, and Nida, family purity. That was his sign, which the acronym was Chana. And he told her, you're going to tell me these words, I know you are the right one. Now, comes of course the question, why did Yaakov want Rachel? Sarakol Yaakov was one of our forefathers, he had Ruach HaKodesh, he had a very great prophet. Why did he want Rachel? What caused the desire to want Rachel? So the first opinion says that Rivka told him, you go to Haran, once you hit the well, the first girl that comes there, that's the one. She gave him already instructions. So he says, okay, he went to the well, he says, Rachel, my mom told me, that's the one. So that's the first opinion. The second opinion is that Yaakov knew that Leah was belonging to Esav. Because when Rachel and Leah were born, Lavan sent an email to Rivka to tell her that I had baby girls. So the email didn't come in through the iPhone, he came on a camel, but Lavan, as a good brother, he told Rachel, I told Rivka, I just had girls. And she was like, oh, what a coincidence, I just had two boys. So they right away said, okay, la bechor la bechora, the oldest from the boy to the oldest to the girl, and atzir la tzira. So Yaakov already knew that Leah belongs to Esav. He's like, all I need now, I took his bracha, I took his money, I took his bechora, being the older brother, all I need now is to take his wife. He's not going to wait till my father to die. He's going to come and kill me right now. So he's like, I'm not touching this girl. I'm not getting any close to her. So these are the two opinions why Yaakov skipped and he chose Dafka Rachel. The question is, why did Leah agree to the deal? Why did she agree? I mean, Leah was also an honest woman. I mean, she's agreeing here to some fraudulent deal that Rachel is going to tell her, listen, I'm going to go instead of you, and you're going to be skipped. As it is, there was a big problem there because Rachel was known to be beautiful. It says, Yafat Marev, Yafat Tor. She was a gorgeous woman. And Leah was actually known to be a non-attractive woman. So there was already some problems. Can you imagine the older sister is non-attractive and the younger sister is attractive? Just by that, that's already causing problems. But how did Leah agree to this whole thing? That she's going to be skipped. Now she's going to be waiting now for this wicked man. Now Rachel is going to get married first. I mean, up until today you see the two sisters, if the younger one gets married, that's bad news. The older one will usually get upset. So there's also a question, why did Leah agree to this deal? To have Yaakov skip her. So the thing is that when Leah knew that Yaakov is going to go to skip to Rachel, why did she agree to that? Because Leah knew that Yaakov bought the Bechorah. That he bought, Bechorah means to be the older brother. At first, by default, Esav was the Bechor, he was the older brother. Then Yaakov bought it. So Leah knew that she belongs to Yaakov. Because she was like, wait a minute, of course I have to be the first one. When the question arises, why did she agree to be switched, to be married to Yaakov? So she says, well, Yaakov bought the Bechorah, now he's the Bechor. So technically I belong to him. Therefore she agreed to be switched and to marry Yaakov. Now, when the question is, why did Yaakov wanted Rachel? So the pshat here, that she was very beautiful. That's it. As much as Yaakov was a big tzaddik, it says that Rachel was beautiful. So he saw a beautiful woman and he wanted to marry a beautiful woman. Now, of course, it's not going necessarily on her external beauty. Rather, when the Torah says that Rachel was beautiful, it means that she was a tzaddiket. She was a perfect tzaddiket. That's what Yaakov saw. Yaakov wanted a perfect woman. Of course, he didn't look at the external part, but he saw that she's 100% a tzaddiket. That's why he wanted her. That's the pshat, why he wanted her. Now, we see many different places in the Torah, and especially in the Oral Torah, in the Talmud, that beauty represents somebody who's a tzaddik. For example, look at every one of our heroes in the past has a title. Many times I've been mentioning that you know, for example, Avram is Avram Avinu, our father. David HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron HaKohen. It goes together, it doesn't go separately. And we see that the one who got a very special title of the Tzaddik is Yosef HaTzaddik. Now Yosef was known to be Yafe Toar. Yosef was a very handsome man. All the women wanted him. So we see in many different places in the Torah and in the Oral Torah that a person who's described as beautiful is also considered to be a tzaddik. So Yosef was called Yosef HaTzaddik. Yosef was known to be Yafet Toar. That when he was already a teenager, he would like already be very attractive. How it says that his house is Potiphar, he would play with his hair and make his eyes. And he was basically a very attractive man. So there's a story in the Gemara, in Tractate in Masechet Brachot, about a certain Tana, his name is Rabbi Eliezer, who was very, very sick. And he was on his deathbed. Now at the time, Rabbi Yochanan, who was the Rebbe of the generation, he came to visit him, to do Bikur Cholim, and also he was about to go. And Rabbi Yochanan was also, first of all, known to be a tzaddik, but he was also known to be a very, very attractive man. He was, in many different places, was mentioned to be very beautiful, Yafet Toar. He was known to have a beautiful, beautiful face. On the other hand, for example, just for the sake of example, it was known that Moshe Rabbeinu was not such a handsome man, that it says that Moshe Rabbeinu had the tavei panim, the shape in his face of a murderer. Moshe Rabbeinu had a very rough face. So in many different places we find description how different leaders and heroes in the Torah looked. But Rabbi Yochanan was known to be a very handsome man. Yochanan ben Zakkai. So, anyway, so the story says that Rabbi Yochanan went to Rabbi Eliezer, and he says, Rabbi Eliezer crying, and he tells him, "What are you crying about?" So he tells him, "Well, are you crying on your Limud Torah? You think you don't have enough Torah? What are you crying about? I mean, nobody can have so much Torah." He was first thinking that Rabbi Eliezer is crying that he didn't learn enough Torah, that he doesn't have enough Torah. So Rabbi Yochanan says, "Don't cry. You know, as much as we learn Torah, we're never going to have so much Torah. There's nothing to cry about. You have enough Torah." So Rabbi Eliezer says, "I'm not crying about my Torah." So Rabbi Yochanan tells him, "What are you crying about? Money? About wealth? You don't have enough money? You didn't make enough money in the world? You're not even giving over millions to your kids? What are you crying about? Don't worry, nobody. There's an endless amount of money in the world. It's not about money." Rabbi Eliezer tells him, "I'm not crying about money. I don't care about money." So Rabbi Yochanan tells him, "What are you crying about? That you buried a child?" Rabbi Eliezer lost a child. So he tells him, "What are you crying about? That you lost a child?" Rabbi Yochanan lost 10 kids. So he says, "You crying about losing a child? I buried 10 children. It's not even my children. There's nothing to cry about. That's the Ratzon of the Kadosh Baruch. It's the will of Hashem. There's nothing to cry about." Rabbi Eliezer says, "I'm not crying about losing a child. I understand that was the will of the Kadosh Baruch." So Rabbi Yochanan tells him, "So what are you crying about?" So he's telling him, "I'm crying about your beauty that will go to waste once you're going to be placed in the ground." Sometimes the story in the Talmud, they don't make much sense. But the point behind the story is that in this world, we get attracted to good, beautiful things. But the beauty here in this world, if it's the Torah, if it's something that you left a mark in this world, if it's your love to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that remains forever. But external beauty, at some point when the person gets buried, it goes with the person. So Rabbi Eliezer says, "I'm crying about your beauty that will go away once you get buried." Meaning that the beauty, the external beauty is very temporary. The inner beauty is permanent. So we see that Yaakov was, so to say, attracted to the beauty of Rachel. Now it says that Leah was not so attractive. It says that she was not so attractive because it's describing by how she, her eyes, she used to cry a lot. And from that we learn that she was not so attractive. And Rachel was considered very attractive, but we know that the beauty that Yaakov saw in Rachel was that she was tzedeket, but Leah was in a different level. Leah was in a level of a bala tshuva, not of a tzedeket. Yaakov, of course, wanted Rachel. He was willing to work for her for 7 years, to suffer Lavan, to be in his house. But Hashem told him, "I know you want Rachel, but you're not getting her. That's not my ratzon. my will is that you're getting Leah. I'm not consulting with you right now what you want. I know what you want. The power of Leah was that she was a Baalat Tshuva. She was able to be to rise around above her level. Rachel was perfect. Perfect woman. When it's talking about Yafat Mareh and Yafat Tor, Yafat Mareh is the face, Yafat Tor is the body. But Leah was the complete opposite. It says that Enea Hayurakot, her eyes were very soft because she was crying a lot. What does it mean crying? She wasn't like a whiner baby that constantly would get hurt and cry. That wasn't the concept of crying. She was a Baalat Tshuva. She would fail and then cry on what she did and do tshuva. That was the power of Leah. Leah was a person who cries and fixes. This is what the Torah, when Torah says that her eyes were soft and she was crying, not because Yaakov didn't choose her, not because she was not attractive, because it's describing her character trait that she was a Baalat Tshuva. Yes, Rachel was tzadeket. Leah was not a tzadeket, but she had a higher level of Baalat Tshuva. And as the Gemara says, במקום שבעלי תשובה עומדים, צדיקים גמורים אינם יכולים לעמוד. In a place where a Baal Tshuva stands, a complete tzadik cannot stand. Of course comes the tzadikim and they say, whoa, don't get such a big ego. It says, במקום שבעלי תשובה עומדים, where a place where a Baal Tshuva stands, צדיקים אינם יכולים לעמוד. The tzadikim cannot stand and they go to a higher level and a higher level. But that's what the tzadikim come and say. But the reality is that a level of Baal Tshuva is a higher level than a tzaddik. We see an example in the Torah that when we first got the Torah, we were in the level of tzaddikim. But then the Hashgacha Pratit made us do the sin of the golden calf so we can do tshuva and be in the level of a Baal Tshuva. And when we got the second Luchot Abrit, the tablets, then we're already in a level of a Baal Tshuva. And when a lot of people, chas v'shalom, they look at a Baal Tshuva in a lower level, which unfortunately in our generation you see in many congregations, if you're a Baal Tshuva, you're second hand, it's a shmate. But the reality is that a Baal Tshuva is a very high level. We want to strive to constantly reach to a level of a Baal Tshuva, and a lot of people don't understand. They're like, oh, but I did so many problems in the past and so many sins, and for years I didn't keep Shabbat and I didn't do this and I didn't do that, and how will Hashem will ever forgive me, and I'm never going to be perfect and so forth. But we see that the level of a Baal Tshuva is a much, much, much greater level than a tzaddik. And there's a story that kind of explains how Hashem sees the Baal Tshuva. Is that there was once a king, and he said that he needs a second to the king. He needs his second hand, the person who will inherit the kingship. So he goes to his advisors and he tells them, you go and find to me the most perfect, fit person for this job, to inherit my place. So they go around to the country, they look around, they gather 10,000 people, and they start running tests. And from 10,000 it goes to 9,000 and to 8,000 and to 7,000, start narrowing it down. After weeks of work, they run it down to 1,000, then they narrow it down to 500 and then to 100, and they're running all these tests and testing every human being that they found. And then finally, after months of searching, they narrow it down to 3 men. They come to the king and they said, we have 3 guys that according to all the credentials, after all the tests that we did, these are the 3 guys that are most fit to take your place. What's the final exam that the master wants us to do? So he tells them, okay, now that you narrowed it down to the last 3, this is the final test. He approaches the 3 men and he tells them, we are going to put each and every one of you in a room. And we're going to lock you in the room for the entire night. In the room, each and every one of you is going to get a bottle of wine. This is my special private wine collection. And of course we cannot relate with the last to the wine, but imagine the biggest te'ava that we have in this world is compared to what they had at that time of the story to the wine. And he tells them, this is my wine. The test will be who can sit in the room the entire night when the bottle is next to him and not open the bottle. The one that will not open the bottle is going to be my right hand and eventually take my place. They took everybody, they put them in the room, locked them in the room with the bottle of wine. They wait the whole night. Comes the morning, 10 a.m., let's open the doors. They're going to the first door. Everybody's standing next to the door. The king, everybody's around. Drum roll, they're opening the door. They see the guy sitting like this on the bed. The bottle is next to him, sealed, as if the way, same way he got it. All like, wow, that's probably the man. Can you imagine holding the teava for this wine and not touching the bottle? Psh, wow. Okay, they go to the next door. Everybody's standing already. What's going to be here? Drum roll. They're opening the door. You see the guy on the floor. The bottle is open, completely empty, and the guy is like all drunk. Okay, he's out. They go to the third door. Everybody's all tense. What's going to be here? Drum roll. They open the door. They look right away at the bottle, and they see the bottle is open. But only a little bit is missing, and it's closed again. And the guy's sitting like this on the bed. The king says, that's the guy. They all say, what? You just said that the guy who will not drink from the bottle will be the chosen one. How? Why give it? He opened the bottle. So the king says, yes, he opened the bottle. He tasted the wine, and then he closed the bottle. He didn't finish it. And the whole night he was looking at the bottle and holding his desire to drink from this wine again. And that's the one I want to be my inheritor. And this is the Baal Tshuva. The tzaddik never opens the bottle. He doesn't know even how it tastes. It doesn't matter if he has the Yetzer Hara or not. Assuming it's not a tzaddik gemur, he still has some bad in him. He doesn't have the desire to drink from the wine. He's controlling the teva, the urge. The Baal Tshuva already opened the wine, tasted it. It's real good. Now he seals it, and now for the rest of his life he's looking at the bottle, and he has the struggle not to open the bottle. That's the level of a Baal Tshuva, and that's the why in a place where a Baal Tshuva stands, a tzaddik cannot stand, because the Baal Tshuva tasted the taste, the good taste of sin. And he has the power to hold himself, but the Baal Tshuva also fails. So he gets up, he closes the bottle, he cries a little bit, and he moves on. He says, I'm a Baal Tshuva. Okay, fine. I wasn't able to hold my Yetzer Hara. And that was the level of Leah. Leah was a Baal Tshuva. Rachel was perfect. She was a tzedekah. That's why Yaakov wanted Rachel. She was like, I want a perfect woman. Now, if you look even in the relations to the two mothers, look at the kids they brought. Rachel was a tzedekah. She brought two tzedekim. Yosef a tzedek. And Binyamin. Binyamin was such a tzaddik that the Gemara says about Binyamin that the only reason why he died is because of the curse of the Nachash, that everybody has to die. If there wasn't the curse of the snake, Binyamin would not die. He was such a tzaddik. So Rachel brought two tzaddikim. No problem. She only brought two. But look at Leah. All of her sons are not tzaddikim, are all Baalei Tshuva. Look at the first one, Reuven. Reuven was a hothead, Kaasan, all the time. And then Shimon and Levi, two Meshuganes, goes and kill a whole city. And then Yehuda goes and do what he does with his daughter-in-law. I mean, all the kids of Leah are troublemakers, but they're Baalei Tshuva. These are the fathers that brings us the koach to do Tshuva. Look at the story of Yehuda. Can you imagine the leader, the Rebbe of the generation, that was Yehuda was, he goes, you know the whole story, we're going to read it in 2 weeks. He goes and he has relations with his daughter-in-law. He gets her pregnant. Then they bring her to him. He decrees that she has to be killed. Then she comes and shows that it's actually him. And what does he do? He admits. He says, yes, I was wrong. Can you imagine what a level? He could easily move his head around. Get rid of her. He admits. That's what a level. It's about tshuva. So Rachel was able to produce two tzaddikim. Leah was producing Baalei Tshuva. And that's the level of Leah. That's why Yaakov was a tzaddik. So he says, I need to be with a tzaddiket. He was wrong in some way. Because at the end of the life, he ended up being buried next to Leah. So, not chas v'shalom saying lashon hara about Yaakov, that he made the wrong analogy, but he constantly wanted to be with Rachel. He says, I'm a tzaddik, I need to be with the tzaddiket. It kind of ties in to what I taught last week about the parasha of Toldot. Why, last week I asked the question, why did Yitzchak bless Esav? So look at, if you weren't here, look at the video of last week where I'm saying that Yitzchak was able to see beneath the surface of Esav. Yeah, Yitzchak was a well digger, that was his business. He had a talent to hear the water that is running under the surface. He was able to look at Esav and see what's going underneath. Not to see the external that he was wicked, rather the point that there was something pure inside. So Leah was in the level of Esav, so to say, a bala tshuva. So the reason why Yaakov decided to skip and to go to Rachel, because she was a tzaddiket. But really, what we need to take from that is that Leah was a bala tshuva, and that's where we come from. That's what we need to take from that, from this lesson, that we're not tzaddikim. We're not close to being tzaddikim. We have our daily struggle that we constantly fight with our yetzer hara. Now, Hasidic philosophy explains that the difference between the separation between Leah and Rachel, Rachel corresponds to the positive mitzvot, to the mitzvot aseh. Because the mitzvot aseh are corresponding to our body. We have 248 mitzvot aseh, positive mitzvot, which are corresponding to the 240 limbs we have in our body. Rachel is representing the mitzvot aseh. Mitzvot aseh comes from something positive. A tzaddik, I'm doing. I'm putting tefillin on. I'm putting tzitzit on. I'm benching. Leah represents the mitzvot lo taaseh, the not don't do's, the power of refraining, of the don't do this, don't eat mixed meat and dairy, don't wear woolen linen, don't light fire on Shabbat. Leah comes from the source, from the mitzvot lo taaseh. Bechlal, in the Kabbalistic terminology, Rachel and Leah, there are two types of spiritual mothers, Ima Ilah, Ima Tata'a. Rachel is the Ima Tata'a, she's the Malchut, Leah is the Ima Ilah. Maybe this week, maybe we'll have time, we'll do a shiur about the spiritual structure of Rachel and Leah. But Leah represents the mitzvot lo taaseh, the point of the Baal Tshuva. What we want to take from this is not that, first of all, that we're not tzaddikim. We're not tzaddikim, we're not going to be tzaddikim. We are Baalei Tshuva. And we have to understand that, first of all, the level of a Baal Tshuva, what does it mean to be a Baal Tshuva? And the point to take from that is that every day I have a struggle. Every day, something new comes on the horizon. Every day I have something that will make me fight my Yetzer Hara. Sometimes I will win, and sometimes I don't win. And the reality is that a lot of the times we don't win. The point to take from that is not to fall into despair and say, that's it, I lost the game, and I'm worthless. Rather to say, no, I want to learn from now from my matriarch, Leah, what does it mean to be a Baal Tshuva? And a Baal Tshuva is a very high level, and throughout my entire life, all I have to do is struggle. And the reason why I gave the example, the story from the Talmud, is because what Rabbi Eliezer was crying, he says, the what really remains is your avodah, the work in this world. Not the fact that you're a tzaddik, and there he was telling Rabbi Yochanan that you are beautiful, and your beauty will go into the ground when you die. He was basically saying, forget about the beauty. He wasn't concentrating on beauty. He was saying, Rabbi Yochanan, you're such a tzaddik, what work did you do in this world? So, Rabbi Eliezer, the meaning behind why he was crying is because what did you do in this world? What avodah did you do in this world? The fact that you're a tzaddik, Hashem is not looking for tzaddikim. Hashem has many tzaddikim. Hashem is not; he doesn't have interest in the tzaddikim. Hashem is interested in the Baalei Tshuva. And when Rabbi Eliezer was crying, he was, what did you do? What avodah did you do in this world? So the Kadosh Baruch Hu brings us to a level that we are going to be a Baal Tshuva. Hashem wants us to be a Baalei Tshuva. So the avodah that I want to take for this week is that this week I'm going to fail probably in at least 1 to 100 things. And next week I'm going to fail in at least 1 to another 100 things. The point is not to take any, not to be affected by that. Not to say, okay, that's it, I failed, my whole week is messed up. Now I in the eyes of Hashem, I'm nothing. The point to take from that, we read every week in the song of Lecha Dodi, the first verse that we read is Itna'ari me'afar kumi. Itna'ari me'afar kumi, what it means, the translation is get up, brush off the dirt, and move on. And it's referring to the motion of almost every day I fail. I don't want to say now Lashon Hara. I don't want to lie now to this person. I was in a situation, a lie came out. I don't want to chas v'shalom hurt that person. I'm constantly, it's not, one might say, I didn't really mean to. I'm forget about now if you really mean to. But all day long we have this, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't want to do that. And I feel that I fell into the dirt. So the psalm tells me, Itna'ari me'afar kumi, get up from the dust, brush off all the dirt, it's fine. And then it continues in saying, V'livshi bigdei tif'ar techami, wear the garments, the beautiful garments, and to have the glory of my nation. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants and is interested in the Ba'alei Tshuva. He doesn't get impressed by the tzaddikim. The tzaddikim have their job. Hashem is constantly looking at us, and he says, I want Ba'alei Tshuva. That's in a very general way why the Kadosh Baruch Hu even gave the option of sinning. Why did the Kadosh Baruch Hu allow the sin of the snake to come into the world? So there will be the option of sinning, so there will be the option of doing tshuva. And when you do tshuva, you rise to a much higher level. And that's our avodah. Our avodah is to be about tshuva. My avodah is to overpower my desire. My avodah is not only to fight my struggles all day long, is to know that when I lose, nothing happened. I can admit I did something wrong, and there's nothing greater than to lehodot al ha'emet, is to admit on the truth, yes, I wasn't wrong, I wasn't 100% right. I once heard a term, I don't know how good it's going to sound in English, in Hebrew, it says, tichashel bishvil lilmod, ki bli lilmod, bli lichashel lo tuchal lilmod. Like, allow yourself to fail, because without failing, you can't learn. I mean, in English, it doesn't sound so good, but the concept is, you can allow yourself sometimes to fail. Because only by failing, you can learn how to not fail. So, the lesson for the week, what we need to take for this week, we're in the second week of the beginning of the month of Kislev, that the entire power of a month of Kislev is to removing the cover of something that conceals. We talked about it last week. Kislev, the kaf and the samech comes from the word kisui, something that covers. Lav medvav corresponds to the 36 candles of Hanukkah, to the 36 tzaddikim that are hidden in this world, to the 36 hours that the light, the godly light that is called Or HaGanuz, the special light that God created the world with and then removed it for the time of Mashiach, was shining for 36 hours. So this is the hidden light. The hidden tzaddikim, the hidden lights, the hidden light that is concealed in the lights of the candles of Hanukkah. So the power of Kislev is to remove the cover. So we're in the second week of removing this cover. This is our avodah for this week, to understand and to have the power for the rest of the weeks that when I fail, nothing, okay, I failed. Do tshuva, admit, get up, brush off the dirt, and you move on. And my entire life, the Gemara says, v'kol chayecha yu b'tshuva. If every day I do tshuva, it means I'm good. If comes the end of the day and I'm sitting on the bed and I'm saying Kriyat Shema al Amita, it means that my day was well, that I was, and I have what to do tshuva for. If it comes the end of the day and I think that there's nothing to do tshuva for, something went wrong this day, or that my ego is way out of control, that I think that everything was perfect today. That's why the Arizal says that at the end of the day when you read Kriyat Shema al Amita, you do tshuva. You go through the entire day. It says that the Hasidim used to take a note and write all day long what they did. And at the end of the day, when they did Kriyat Shema al Amita, they would go through the notes. Okay, I did this, I did this, I did this. Why? Because if you really do that, comes the end of the day, you're like, wow, I owe this person money. I hurt that person. I didn't show up on time. I exaggerated here. I said a lie here. Ooh, I have a lot of tshuva to do. And if I live like that, every day b'tshuva, then Yom Kippur was just a day to fast. And that's it. Why? Because every day I did already tshuva for my entire sins. And it's not a bad thing to do chas v'shalom, to fail, you know, is getting momentum. If you're looking at the rhythm of life, the life's rhythm is going up and down, like a monitor of a sick person in the hospital. It goes up and down. So our life is going up and down. One time I'm up, one time I'm down. But when I'm down, it's not to fall into despair, it's to grab momentum and to say, okay, now I'm going again up. Going down to descend in order to ascend. So my entire motion is the motion of a Baal Tshuva. That's what we learn from our matriarch Leah. That's what I want to take with me. That a Baal Tshuva is a very high level. And that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu's interest. That's why when Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel, Hashem says, I don't want you to marry her. I don't want, that's not my will. Yaakov was so persistent that he ended up getting her. But we see that he ended up getting her, but for a very short period. He didn't get to enjoy her. He didn't get to be with her. He didn't have, most of the kids were not with her. Even when he was, you know, we're going to continue reading it in the parasha, that most of the time, he would go to Leah. The whole story with the flowers, and most of the time he was with Leah. Even though his heart was for Rachel, he was constantly, Kadosh Baruch Hu put him with Leah. So Bezant Hashem, we should constantly remember who we are and where we're going to, and what is our main avodah in this world. Our main avodah is to fight our yetzer hara, is to seal this little bottle, not to taste. We tasted once from the wine, try not to taste from the wine as much as it's good, and to know that my even though I feel when I fail that I'm a loser, chas v'shalom, or that Hashem doesn't like me, or that my Torah is worthless, it's complete opposite. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is interested to see how I'm getting up, how I'm fighting my yetzara, not to fall into despair, not to fall into sadness, and to know, okay, like Yehuda, nothing happened. I did a boo-boo. I did a mistake. I'm human. Here I'm admitting. This is one of the most important things in the part of the tshuva, is to admit. That's why we say every day, three times a day, we say vidui. Ashamno, bagadno, gazalno. I admit. Hashem says, at least be a man. At least admit. I'm not expecting anything else. Don't pretend like you didn't do anything. Just admit, yeah, I'm sorry. Saying I'm sorry is not so easy, but that's what Hashem wants. Just to be about tshuva. Bezrat Hashem should merit always to see our faults, but to see the greatness in the fault. That in the fault, there's also a lot of great things. I'm just going to say one more thing, then we're done. That somebody once asked me, why does Hashem constantly let us fail, or allows us to sin, or that we're not going to be constantly? Wouldn't Hashem want us to be tzaddikim? Wouldn't Hashem, He wants us to do mitzvot? Why did He give us the etzara? So my analogy is that this world is full of diamonds. Now, if you take now a sack of diamonds and you throw it on the sand, imagine it's like a sand of the beach. Very thin sand. You just go like that, all the diamonds are already buried in the sun, in the sand. Now imagine that would happen to you right away. Nobody come close, nobody move, and you start going very slowly like this with the sand, looking for your diamonds. So this world is full of diamonds. Kadosh Baruch Hu threw a bunch of diamonds in this world, and He told us, go and look for it. Now, the problem with us is that we have an ego. A person who has an ego, he walks very straight, chin up, I'm good, I'm the best, nobody's better than me, and so forth. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, with your ego, you're not going to see what's on the ground. So Hashem goes like that. Look down. So He allows me to sin, because when I sin, I fall down. That's when I see how I'm not so great. And then I'm not so right, and I'm not so honest, and so forth. So it's actually Hashem's kindness that He's just bending my head down. He says, look down, because the diamond is on the floor. Kill your ego, ignore your ego, look down, you'll find diamonds there. So when I fail and I fall on the ground, Rabbi Nachman from Bremse says, En yeush ba'olam. Why? Because when you already fell on the ground, instead of falling into despair, just know you fell on a diamond. Just Ignore your ego. Oh, I felt. Look on the ground. There's a diamond there. Just sift a little bit. Up. Oh, here's a diamond. I can't believe it. When I told this to my son, all day long he walks like that. He walks it with his head down. So the point is that Hashem wants us to lower our ego. Why? Because the diamonds are on the floor. And when I fail, I have to look at the good part in it. That's why the Pasuk says, "Itnarim afar kumi," get up, because there's a diamond there. Because in the fault, I can actually see something, I can see where what I can fix. More than that, when I rise up, then I take the diamond with me. And my entire life, I'm picking diamonds in this world. So Bezant Hashem, we should only pick diamonds. We should always be in the level of a Baal Tshuva. I'm very happy that I'm a Baal Tshuva, that Hashem allows me to fail. It's part of the motion of this world. And we got to learn from that, and this is what we have to apply this week, that I'm a Baal Tshuva, and that it's good, and my entire motion in this world is to do Tshuva. Is I'm going to fail. I'm not telling you to put yourself in situations to fail. That's not what we want. But it's going to happen whether we want it or not. Not to get excited, not to fall into despair, not to let it affect my Avodat Hashem. You know, I have to tell you a short story that not too long ago, I met a young man in a lecture, and he got very inspired, and he started coming to more classes. And he started coming to every week to one class. And then he started to come to two classes. And slowly, slowly he came. And it was very beautiful to see that he's constantly coming and to see his interest and how he gets so excited. Of course, at some point I told him, start putting tefillin on. And at some point down the line, he started to come to pray with us every day, which was unbelievable. One day he doesn't show up to pray. So I call him up thinking maybe he's sick. And I tell him, why didn't you show up today? So he tells me, I had enough with this. I'm like, what? He's like, I'm not coming anymore. I feel like a hypocrite. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you know where I was last night? I'm like, I don't care where you were last night. He's like, I'll tell you, I went to a party. I said, okay, no. He tells me, you know what I did last night? I said, I don't care what you did last night. He's like, I'll tell you. I met a girl. And then we went home, and I did all the sins in the book. And you think I have the chutzpah to show up today in the morning just to walk into the synagogue and to put tefillin on? I feel like a hypocrite. I told him, I'm sorry to tell you, but it seems like you're suffering from some rare disease of stupidity. I told him, what's the connection between one to the other? He's like, listen, yesterday I did so many sins, I feel like a hypocrite to walk into the shul, to put my talis, to put my tefillin, and to pretend like I'm a tzaddik and pray. I told him, you're doing such a mistake because by you not showing up to shul, you know how many mitzvot aseh, positive mitzvot, you just missed? Who gave you permission to miss this mitzvot? By you not coming to shul, you did not put tefillin on. These are two positive mitzvot from the Torah. Tefillin for the head, tefillin for the hand. This is a positive mitzvah from the Torah that you now did not do. If you would come to shul, you would put a talis on, another mitzvah from the Torah. You would say Shema Yisrael, that's a mitzvah from the Torah. You would pray, you would give tzedakah, you would learn. Tell him, you know how many mitzvot from the Torah you just missed? Who gave you the exemption? Who gave you now the permission not to put tefillin on? So I told him, look at the mistake that you're doing. You are not going to be judged by the Kadosh Baruch Hu for yesterday doing a sin. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows. He sent the Yetzer Hara. He made the option for you to go to the party. You know what the judgment is going to be? On the fact that you didn't wake up. That you didn't come to put tefillin on. Hashem is going to say, who cares what you did yesterday? Do tshuva. Go to the mikveh, wash yourself up, do tshuva, get up, move on. Who allows you not to come to shul today? Who cares how you feel? Who cares you feel like a hypocrite? You are obligated to do these 10 mitzvot aseh, these positive commandments, and you didn't do them. For that you're going to be judged for. For the fact that you woke up in the morning and it says, oh, I feel so low, I did such a sin yesterday, I am not worthy, I feel like a hypocrite. Who's asking you? You're obligated to do these mitzvot. So get up, brush off the dirt, do tshuva, Bezrat Hashem, Hashem will forgive you. But who tell you that you're not supposed to do these mitzvot? Maybe for that Hashem is going to get upset at you. I told him the din, the judgment is going to be on that. The point is that the Yetzer Hara is going to make me fall, and when I'm on the ground, that's when he's going to start kicking me. The point is that when I'm on the ground, to say, whoa, okay, you won this round, nothing happened, and I get up. And even if I did a sin a minute ago, and I know that I do it, and I feel bad, to say, okay, the sin is the sin, I have to do tshuva for it, but right now it's time to go to pray. Right now it's time to say Birkat HaMazon. Right now, I have to not continue the lie, not to continue the conversation with the Lashon Hara, and not to continue, and not to be impressed or overwhelmed by the Yetzer Hara, my sin. That's the power that we get from Leah. That's the power that we need to take and incorporate into our life. And Bezrat Hashem, with our tshuva and Maasim Tovim and our good deeds, we will hasten the Geula one step closer. And Bezrat Hashem, we should already reach to the level that the redemption is going to come. Ve'et ruach atuma avir min haaretz. The power of impurity I'm going to remove from this place. Mashiach is going to shech the Yetzer Hara, and then we're going to be in the level back of tzaddikim. Bezrat Hashem, this should happen very soon with the coming of Mashiach. Should have a beautiful, beautiful week. We started with a beautiful sunshine, so the whole week should shine on us and be a beautiful week.